Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynNBet.com and download that app today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. That's PropSwap.com, promo code SGP. And finally, we're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Sign up at UnderdogFantasy.com with promo code SGPN and receive a free $25 entry to use in the Best Ball Mania 2 for a chance to win $1 million. And make sure to tune in to Draft Day, where Ryan Kramer will attempt to draft for 24 hours on July 13th. That's right, he's going to draft best ball lineups for 24 hours, so make sure to tune into that on UnderdogFantasy.com. And, of course, don't forget to download the SGPN app. That's right. We've got an app now. It gives you all of the odds, picks, right in the palm of your hand, and podcasts right in the palm of your hand. You can download that on the App Store or the Google Play Store, and I suggest you do so right now. Heidely ho, degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 54. You might notice that it is not the normal Jeff Fox giving you the rundown at the very beginning of this episode. He is not here this time. Instead, you are listening to the dulcet tones of Daniel Gumby Vreeland, the host of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast and the Prelim Primer. Jeff is on vacation this week. But, as he usually does, we usually honor each episode with a person whose jersey number resembled the episode number, so an obscure athlete, if you will, and this is episode 54 of the MMA Gambling Podcast, and you know what, it just happens to be perfect. Jeff Fox, the other co-host of this, wore number 54 as he played Division III basketball in Canada somewhere, so we're going to honor him with this episode. This episode goes out to Juicy Jeff Fox. Now, I already said that I am Daniel Gumby Vreeland. You may know me from those podcasts that I mentioned. I also write for MMA-Manifesto.com, the Sports Gambling Podcast, Cage Side Press, and a number of other MMA organizations or places where you can see gambling and sports writing. But I can't do this episode alone. There's no way I could carry it. This is usually the part where Jeff would go on and on and on about how he could probably do it himself and not with me. He would give me like a 30-minute long intro that would be more insults than anything else. But I will just tell you that I have a co-host today joining me today from the Fix Fights podcast with Kurt and Ben, Kurt Chase Patrick. Kurt, hey, thanks for filling in here.
Of course, man. I always enjoy chatting with you about MMA, so I'm happy to do it.
All right. So before we begin talking about UFC 264, and there is a ton to unpack from this ridiculously large card, I assume it will take up probably the entire episode, just talking about just how insane everything that went down was. Let me just quickly run down for you guys the stats. While Jeff's not here to berate me and make fun of me for my picks this week, he did once again beat me, second week in a row. I think it's probably his longest winning streak of all time. He went 7-5 this past week with his picks. Of course, if you were doing the degenerate thing and betting $100 on every single fight, as we always advise you to, his 7-5 would still not have been good enough to win any money. He would have actually lost $137.43. I did much worse. I actually finished in at 5-7, which would have lost me close to $400 if I was betting in on every fight. because there actually weren't very many underdogs who won, and I was very underdog heavy this past weekend. And that brings our pick rates on the year to 55% for him, 52% for me. Not great. We do want to get close to that 60-degree mark or 60% mark. But maybe we'll look into that in the coming weeks. Maybe this upcoming week will be a little bit better because I think this upcoming card's a little bit easier. But before we get to this upcoming card, we do have to get to talking about what brought us to the dance, and that is UFC 264. I mean, like, a card that definitely doesn't need any selling by me. I mean, like, there was a $16 million gate on this bad boy. You know, the early reports are anywhere between 1.3 and 1.8 million pay-per-views sold. And that's at the ridiculous new price of whatever they're charging people now, $70 a piece. So, like, the hype was behind this. And it mostly delivered. So the main event, for those of you who have been living under a rock, featured Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor. Hopefully closing out their trilogy, although I don't actually know the answer to that. It of course ended after a pretty dominant first round by Dustin Poirier, but a broken, looked like the bottom of his shin bone for Conor McGregor. Apparently he's already had a 3.5 hour surgery, but the doctors came in between rounds 1 and 2 and stopped the fight. I guess, Kurt, I want to start by talking about this before we actually talk about the fight itself, and maybe it'll even lead us to talking about the fight itself. Do you feel like this is over? Do you feel like we're definitely getting a fourth one?
I mean, for me, I got closure. You know, I think, again, who knows what would have happened in that second round. And I thought Conor started to look a little bit tired. I thought Poirier was doing great work. I think if Poirier kept going to the ground game, I think he had a very distinct advantage. You know, for me, like I said, I think I have a pretty good idea of who is the better fighter. But again, it seems like there's a lot of heat between them. Obviously, there's probably a lot of money to be made. I just think looking at the landscape of 155 now, and if you look like a year plus down the road when Conor would actually be able to, you know, probably fight again, like who knows what it's going to look like. So at least, like Dana was talking about, for God forbid, if Conor's first fight back was against Dustin Poirier for a title, if Poirier, you know, did take it off Oliveira's hands, I'm not about it. Maybe later down the line, I don't know. I just think these guys are going in two separate directions. I'd rather see like a Conor, and again, maybe we can talk about it later, but I think there's a lot of other routes you can go for Conor when he does come back. And again, who knows how he's going to come back, right? That's a very, very serious injury. He had a serious surgery. We'd have no idea what he's going to look like. So as of right now, I don't see the need for it.
Yeah, and I think you hinted at what I was thinking, too, when they were like, yes, we're definitely going to do a fourth one. They're heading in different directions, and if he does come back, he's, what is he, 1-4 in his last five fights, right? Yes. I mean, I guess if we're counting the Floyd one, right? And you know, like, Poirier is on a crazy roll. I could totally see him beating Oliveira. I mean, that's a coin toss fight for me right now. Like, I could definitely see him winning that. If that's true, how can you justify giving him that title shot? And, like, if you say he's just got to win one more, well, one more against who? Like, is he going to beat Michael Chandler? Is he going to beat Justin Gaethje? Like, who is he going to beat to earn, like, quote-unquote, if he has to, quote-unquote, earn that title shot? Who do you think he can beat in that, let's say, top 10?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, here's my thing. I don't know if Conor is, let's say, I don't know if Conor is an elite fighter anymore. And that's not to say Conor is not a very good fighter, because I still think he is. I still think he could beat some guys in, you know, the top 10 and possibly even the top 5. But I think his days of jumping back into any sort of mix and fighting a Justin Gaethje, a Michael Chandler, a Beneil Dariush. I mean, if you look at that top 5, all those guys are just excellent, excellent guys. But, you know, what's the thing about them? None of them really have that big of a name. I just can't see Conor jumping back in and taking a number one contender's fight or a fight against one of those savages to try to earn a title shot. So unless it was some sort of gift shot that he doesn't deserve, yeah, I really can't see him jumping back into that mix.
Yeah, and in a year, too, you know, you mentioned those guys don't have big names. In a year, those names might still be there, but there also might be Islam Makhachev,
yes,
Rafael Fiziev, Brad Riddell, I mean, even Armand Sarturian or Gregor Gillespie. Like, I can see those guys knocking on the door of the top 5, too. And he ain't fighting any of those guys. Like,
no.
The payday's just not there for him on that. So, Yeah, I mean, like, logistically, I think you nailed it. Like, unless he gets gifted something that we all feel he shouldn't have, it just doesn't make any sense. Now, that being said, it's the UFC. They would totally gift him one a year down the road if the narrative fit. But, man, yeah, it just seems like it's not going to happen. Now let's talk about the fight a little bit, too, because it is interesting. You know, John Kavanaugh came out after that fight and has said he liked the way things were going for Conor. Was there anything in there, too, for you? Because you mentioned he got tired. Was there anything there for you that made you feel good for Conor or have positive aspects here for Conor?
You know, here's the thing. I thought Conor had moments in this fight, just like he had moments in the first fight. But, I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, I think Poirier probably has tasted in these three fights Conor's best shots. Obviously, it put him down in the first fight at 145, but at 155, it just seems like Poirier is not that afraid of Conor's strikes, right, where he can walk Conor down, he can beat him up in boxing range. Obviously, we saw when he takes him down, he was able to control him on top and land big ground and pound. I just don't think, and again, who knows? Conor has the power to finish anybody. He's finished Poirier in the past. I just don't think at 155, he really, in my opinion, has the power to finish Poirier. I think I've seen enough between these last two fights. Not to say that extremely confidently, but to say that relatively confidently. And again, I thought he was starting to look a little bit tired. Maybe John Kavanaugh's got, you know, obviously a little bit different intel from being in the camp. But for me, in my eyes, I did not like the way the fight was going for Conor. Even if he had some moments.
Yeah, and I think you said it good there, too. It seemed like he started to fade. Like, if you ask yourself, when is Conor at his best? When you ask yourself, who is the most dangerous, toughest Conor McGregor? And it's the first round on the feet, in the first couple of minutes on the feet, he wasn't even winning that fight, I don't think, right? Like, he had his moments, but, like, I don't think he was winning the fight on his feet because there's a reason he, like, sort of shot and then pulled a guillotine, right? Like you don't do that if you feel like you're getting the best of somebody on the feet, and he did that and winds up on the bottom and eats a whole bunch of elbows. What did you think of the decision to shoot the guillotine? Like that, I mean, like, it's funny because it's Poirier, and Poirier talks all the time about jumping guillotines, but, like, did you think that was a desperation move? Did you think it was, like, I'm running out of energy and kind of think, or did you think he thought he had it?
Yeah, I don't really know. I definitely, you know, obviously Poirier has very good jiu-jitsu. It's not something I don't think we've ever seen Conor do. So I don't. Yeah, it was a mix of maybe not confidence on the feet. Maybe he didn't want to waste energy defending the takedown. But again, I mean, you just put yourself in a terrible position. Like, even dude, I thought he honestly probably defended takedowns a little bit better in the Khabib fight than he did against Poirier, especially early in that first round of the Khabib fight. I mean, this is just uncharacteristically weird. Here's the thing, though: you have to wonder, like, Conor threw that kick. Poirier called it out. I mean, have you seen the little clips and snippets from that, you know, the kick where Poirier checks it and then points at him? Yep. I don't know. Maybe Conor knew he was injured and he wanted to jump the guillotine, and then obviously we saw the result later in the fight, so that could be something to it. But, yeah, something was not going, I think, right for Conor to where he felt like he had to jump that guillotine, because that is very uncharacteristic from him.
Yeah, that's true. Let's talk about the injury, too, because, you know, you mentioned that Poirier definitely thought it happened. You can see the look on his face when they paused it in the post-fight show. Like, he clearly thought he had done some damage. I think he took it on the knee is why it happened. But the other weird thing about the injury, too, is I think a lot of people think he hurt his leg when he stepped back. But I actually think he broke it when he pushed off on that punch. Because if you watch him push off, he looks really unstable pushing off. And, like, that, for me, don't get me wrong, like, stepping back awkwardly and falling, like, it's bad, too. Like, it's indicative that possibly it was broken ahead of time. But if you break it pushing off for a punch, like, I definitely think there was damage earlier in the fight. Whether Poirier for sure really knew it, or if he just thinks he kind of knew it, and then, like, you know, obviously after the fact, hindsight's 20/20, but, like, I definitely think there was damage in there before.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I definitely think there was damage, you know, for it to step back and just, you know, snap like that. It was probably broken. You know, he stepped back hard and it just gave out. I mean, it's really unfortunate to see. You never want to see any sort of injury, you know, serious like that in a fight. So it was unfortunate that that happened and the fight ended like that. But I don't know, man. Poirier seems to think it was from that kick. I mean, he literally has that exact, like, moment in his mind. I watched it a bunch of times. You can't see too much from that, but he definitely checks the kick. But, yeah, I think it was injured somewhere in that fight.
For sure. And now, you know, here's the other thing that's worth noting. Two of the three judges had the first round because all their scorecards went in because it took them a while to call off the fight. All three judges gave the round to Poirier, obviously. Now, two of them gave him a 10-8 round. Would you have scored that a 10-8 round, too?
I don't think I would have scored it a 10-8, because although Poirier did very good work, I do think Conor had some moments. I don't necessarily think Poirier was extremely close to finishing the fight. Yes, he did dominate, but he never, like, established any guard passes. He never, you know, had it to where, like, Herb Dean was about to step into the fight. He never threatened any submissions or dropped Conor, obviously, until, like, the, you know, the end of the fight. But, I mean, did I have a super big problem with the 10-8? No, but I probably wouldn't have scored it a 10-8, you know, on my card. But who am I?
Yeah, I was about 50-50 on it, and I agree. Like, I heard a couple of people say that they thought Herb Dean was about to step in when he was throwing that, like, slew of elbows that he threw in a row. I don't think he was. Like,
I don't think so, no.
I mean, it takes a lot to get, as we're going to talk later with Sean O'Malley and Chris Moutinho, it takes a lot for Herb Dean to step in and stop a fight. So, yeah, like, I don't think it was all that close. Now, obviously, what's next for Dustin Poirier is pretty obvious, right? He's going to fight Charles Oliveira probably pretty soon because it seems like he walked out unscathed. It seems like Charles Oliveira is ready to roll. I'm sure we could see them sometime in September, October. You hinted at it before. We're a year probably away from seeing Conor McGregor again, or at least, let's say conservatively 9 months. When he does come back, I'm going to ask you this. What do you think will happen? Because that's a whole nother question that we'll touch upon in 2 seconds. But what would you like to see happen next for Conor McGregor?
I think the one fight for me that makes sense is the Nate Diaz trilogy. I still think there's money to be made there. I think you could do it at two different weight classes. There's no title implications on the line. Obviously, the fight's been successful before. It's 1-1. They clearly still have beef. For me, that's where I'd like to see Conor go. And I think it makes a lot of sense for Nate as well.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that one makes sense. You know, I know we've talked off air before about Masvidal always being right there. Although, you know, we're going to talk about the welterweight picture in a second. And it seems like he might have a dance partner as well. Masvidal, and I will also say that the interesting pop-up of heat this weekend, if he does decide to stay at 55 and that he wants to contend, it does seem like the heat has been reignited between him and RDA,
yes.
Which is kind of, I like forgot that heat was there, and I know that that's like, that the reason he fought Diaz was because RDA hurt his foot, but like, and then RDA weighed in and they jawed backstage, and then RDA tweeted out a picture of his foot and called it a bruised foot because that's what Conor called his way back in the day. Like, it, like, sort of ignited something where I was like, oh, shit, yeah. Like, I did want to see that fight back in the day. And RDA is, like, resurging in 155 pounds. He's, like, kind of relevant in that division now. Of course, who knows what the landscape's going to look like in a year. But, you know, I said this before the fight. I said it after the fight. Conor McGregor's career is not over because he loses this fight. There were always options for him, win or lose. He's a draw. We're going to see plenty more of Conor McGregor. Now, I want to move next to talk a little bit about the co-main event, but before I do need to let you guys know that this episode is brought to you by WynnBET. WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in all of your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today, and you'll get a special offer of up to $500 risk-free. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download that app today. And also, we're brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Find the best odds on NBA championship tickets when you buy directly from other bettors on PropSwap. See a ticket you like, but you think the price is too high, submit a bid for a price that you think is fair, and then buy it. Every ticket purchased on PropSwap can be resold at any time with one click of a button, and PropSwap gives you the suggested price tool to let you know how much your ticket is worth. This week, a PropSwap customer sold a $200 12-1 Phoenix Suns championship ticket for $1,200. That's a 5x return for the seller. Now, it looks like the Phoenix Suns are going to win, so he might have lost out a little bit, but both him and the buyer made out good because the adjusted odds of negative 160 for the buyer is better than every other sports book in the country at this point. So everybody wins with PropSwap. Your bet doesn't need to win in order for you to make money. It just needs to improve. Think of it like the stock market, except for sports betting. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. All right, so welterweight action was co-main event, Gilbert Burns versus Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. So both me and Jeff hit the main event. We both said we liked Dustin Poirier in that fight. We also both liked Wonderboy Thompson in the co-main event. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure I put him down as my lock of the week. I thought for sure he would keep the distance. He would stuff takedowns. And that just could not be less of the case. Gilbert Burns looked like an absolute animal in there. Made us forget all about that loss to Kamaru Usman. I mean, like, give us the lowdown. What did you think of his performance in there?
Yeah, I was with you guys. Wonderboy is my lock of the week. I had Wonderboy. I took one bet. I did a parlay on this card, and I lost Wonderboy. I think he hit the nail on the head, man. Gilbert just fought an excellent fight. He fought, I think, smarter than he's fought in many of his fights. He was able to get takedowns when he needed to. He got stung a couple times, but he kept his composure. I mean, dude, I was blown away by Gilbert Burns, and I think this is the signature win in his career. I think it's far and away the best win in his career. Yeah, I can't say enough about Gilbert Burns. I really thought that Stephen Wonderboy Thompson was a terrible matchup for him, and I could not have been more wrong.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because I went into this fight thinking, like, oh, okay, well, what does Gilbert Burns have to do to win? Okay, well, he's got to get on the inside, and he's either got to land a big shot on the inside or he's got to land takedowns. And who has tried to do that to Wonderboy? You know, Jeff Neal tried to get on the inside of him and just got picked apart. Like, yeah, I think Wonderboy landed 150-plus strikes in that fight. Vicente Luque tried to get on the inside, wrestle him a little bit. Got the same thing, picked apart on the outside, 100-plus strikes in that fight. I mean, you could go back to the Woodley fights, but, like, Woodley mostly fought safe in both of those ones. He got a draw in one of them. And I think he landed a cumulative 2 takedowns and 50 minutes of action in that fight. And if you're going to look for somebody who took down Wonderboy before since Tyron Woodley, first of all, nobody since Tyron Woodley. And if you want to go before that, the last one was Matt Brown in 2012. So, you know, if you're telling me that Gilbert Burns needs to get takedowns and get in the inside to win, I mean, like, I thought it was a no-brainer. He scored 3 takedowns. And, like, I don't know, do you feel higher on Gilbert Burns' wrestling here, or do you feel higher about his fight IQ? Because he did know what he needed to do here, which I don't always think he knows.
I would say, honestly, I would say probably fight IQ. I think that, I think he was hurt at least a few times in the fight. I think he was, I don't want to say he was getting tired, but there was times in the fight where I thought Wonderboy looked a lot more fresh than him, but I mean, he was just able to time takedowns at the perfect time. You saw in round 3, Wonderboy had some success early, but Gilbert was able to take him down, stabilize position. Same thing in the first round. I thought when he got hurt, I thought he regrouped and didn't try to get into a firefight or chase down Wonderboy and get countered to death. I think that his fight IQ really showed in this fight. I think his overall game and skill showed through in this fight. I really can't gush enough about Gilbert Burns. I was blown away by this performance. Really, really impressive.
Yeah, and not that I don't usually think of him as like a smart fighter, but there have been times since he's come up to welterweight where he seems very interested to throw hands, right?
Like, yes.
Because when he was down at lightweight, he liked to wrestle, and he got tired, and he came up to welterweight, and you're like, okay, well, now he can wrestle and not get tired. But then he came up to welterweight, and he's like, damn, I can punch harder, which is cool. And you know, like, he's right. He was punching harder. He was, you know, flooring some people. He knocked out Demian Maia. But at the same time, like, that's not the Gilbert Burns who I thought could challenge Kamaru Usman, right? The Kamaru Usman challenger is the one who could wrestle him or try to scramble and turn it into a jiu-jitsu match because Gilbert Burns is damn good at jiu-jitsu. So, yeah, it's nice to see him doing what I think he's best at all the time, and maybe it took an opponent like Wonder Boy to do that. Now, I do want to tip my cap to Wonder Boy here, too, because I think underrated in all of this is a lot of times Wonder Boy looks pretty comfortable doing whatever he's doing, right? Like, he loves to pick apart from the outside. He's usually successful on it, and so we don't usually have to see him go for broke, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't usually have to empty the tank. I think he realized he had to empty the tank here in the third, and it was, I don't know about you, but I thought it was damn fun to watch him in that kind of style.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think times that he's had to really, you know, dig deep, and again, he doesn't have to do it a lot because he generally is able to control, right, the pace and the way he wants to fight. But again, that's, honestly, it's props to Gilbert Burns again to get Wonder Boy, like, off the beaten path, right, to where he had to dig deep and move forward and try to finish the fight. And I think it produced for very high drama in that third round.
Yeah, in you know, both props to Wonder Boy for doing that and props to Gilbert Burns for continuing to fight smart, because that's the other thing, right? Like, his fight IQ held up even in those moments where he didn't feel like, okay, he's not tagging me really hard. I don't have to shoot a desperate takedown here. I don't have to get into a firefight with him. I don't have to try to kick with him. Like, he just was like, I'll stay safe. I'm already up two rounds. I'll win the fight this way. So, yeah, props to him for that. Now, let's go to what's next for both of these two, because Gilbert Burns, very smartly, I think, didn't ask for Kamaru Usman right away, because I don't think he's going to get him, right? Like, right now, you know, it seems pretty clear now that because of this loss for Wonder Boy, it seems like Colby's next.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and like, you know, not for anything, I did think Wonder Boy was the right person to jump the queue. If anybody was, it was Wonder Boy. But because he doesn't have the history with Usman, right? Like, Leon Edwards was never going to jump the queue. He had already lost to Usman. Like, Gilbert was never going to jump the queue. He's already lost to Usman. Like, and yeah, Colby has too, but Colby put up the best fight. So yeah, I think we're going to see Colby again. And Burns seemed to realize that too, right? Like, he could have called for the title fight there. He looked really good in a win over a very tough opponent, a puzzle piece that's kind of hard to fit in there with Wonderboy Thompson. But he just called out everybody. He said anybody who wants to get it, Leon Edwards, Jorge Masvidal, you know, like, and it seemed like Jorge Masvidal cage side was about that life. Is that the one you want to see next?
Well, I think Masvidal realizes that, you know, obviously he's going to have to take, and you know, he just lost to Usman twice. The last one he got flatlined. I think he realizes he has to take one of these guys. I know he's been obviously trying to poke the bear with Colby Covington again, but you know, that's not going to happen because, like you said, it seems like Colby's going to fight Usman next. Honestly, dude, I think the biggest winner of this whole weekend was Leon Edwards, because I think Leon Edwards, let's say Wonder Boy won, like you said, he was going to probably jump that queue. And that was going to force Leon Edwards to maybe fight a Masvidal or a Gilbert Burns or something. But I do like the Masvidal call out. I think it would be interesting, especially on the feet. I think Masvidal is a very crafty grappler. He's crafty with his wrestling, so I'd like to see that style contrast. I honestly wouldn't mind seeing him fight a Leon Edwards. I think that would be really fun. But like I said, I have a feeling Leon is probably going to get the next shot after Colby, and he's going to be fine with waiting. So, I mean, yeah, I think that leaves probably, you know, the one other guy that's going to be interesting is Vicente Luque. If he gets past, honestly, Michael Chiesa, too, I think the winner of that fight is going to be very interesting. I mean, honestly, dude, a Gilbert Burns-Michael Chiesa fight, if that were to come down to it, would be freaking
awesome.
I love
everything about that, right? Because, like, here's the thing about Chiesa, too, and not to go off on too big of a tangent. I have written off Michael Chiesa so many fucking times, and like, and I don't mean that in like a mean way, but I think it's because his body type doesn't scream to me like powerful wrestler, right? Like, when you look at Michael Chiesa, you're like, you know, like he's like a stringy guy, he's good at jiu-jitsu, but his body type doesn't scream to me like, oh, look, that dude can fucking take you down. And then he fought Neil Magny, And I mean, you can count the Rafael Dos Anjos fight, too, if you really want to. And he just dominated the hell out of those two with wrestling, which is just crazy to me how good he's looked up at welterweight. He's like Gilbert Burns in that, like, both of those guys came up a weight class and look 800 times better than they looked at lightweight. Yeah, I would love to see those two fight. I've been saying for a while, too, I'd love to see Chiesa fight Colby Covington, but that's just not a fight Colby Covington ever takes. Because, you know, he's going to take title shot or bust, and if he loses that one, we'll probably never see his ass again. But, doesn't it feel like that? Like, not to go off on too much of a tangent here while we're recapping Gilbert Burns' amazing night, but, like, Colby Covington seems like the person who, once he's gotten a title shot, is never going to fight anything but title shots for the rest of his life, right? Like,
I could see that, you know, or at least, like, big sort of money fights. Again, dude, the problem with the welterweight division, again, not to get too far off topic, but, like, a lot of these fights that have, like, presented themselves on, like, a silver platter, the UFC is not done. Like, Masvidal-Covington
would have been huge.
You know,
Masvidal-Covington would have been huge.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's still fights for Colby I want to see. And, again, like, I'm fine with him getting another title shot, whatever, but I want to see it get moving. Because, again, you got guys like Vicente Luque and Michael Chiesa coming up. Like, Gilbert Burns just got another huge win. You got Leon Edwards. Like, I want to see it moving, and there's a lot of fun fights to make in this division.
Well, and not just that, too. Like, you're right. Like, the top of the division is stagnant right now, and you've got those guys just barely nipping on the outside, like the Michael Chiesas and Vicente Luques. But if you go further down the rankings, too, you got more guys there who are very interesting. Like, everybody talks about Khamzat Chimaev, but Khamzat Chimaev fighting Li Jingliang, Sean Brady, I can't stop talking about Sean Brady. Like, it seems like every time I get the opportunity to, I talk about him for 15 minutes. So I'll hold off on that. But, like, that dude is going to be a really interesting fight for just about anybody in this division because he's got that, like, mean wrestling and top grappling style that just feels like it's going to suffocate a lot of these dudes. And then you got guys like, I mean, Muslim Salikov has looked good in pretty much all of his fights. Jeff Neal's never all that far out. Bilal Muhammad thinks he's storming up the division. Like, there's, like, a lot of guys who are just not getting a chance at the bottom of this top 15. And it's, yeah, like, I just wish there'd be more activity here. But that brings me to my next question, which is Wonderboy. What the hell do we do with Wonderboy next? Because, look, I love the guy. I thought for sure he was going to win this and book himself a title shot. You know, one more chance at the gold. He's probably not going to get the one more chance at the gold anymore. I mean, like, he's 38 years old, now coming off of a loss. But he's, like, way above some of those people I just mentioned, right? Like, he beat the shit out of Vicente Luque. He murdered Jeff Neal. Like, what do you do next with a guy like Wonderboy if he does stick around and decide he wants to fight a bunch more times?
If Wonderboy wants to fight, I still think he's at the level where, again, I don't know what the age and just the like you said, the top of the division is very heavy and you got just killers coming up from the bottom. But, man, if he wants to fight again, I think you put him right back into a big fight, you know. I'd love to see a Vicente Luque rematch. I think that could be interesting. Again, a Michael Chiesa would be interesting. Leon Edwards could be interesting. A Bilal Muhammad, if he wins, you know, his next fight could be a great fight. I think you just put him right back in there with another big fight, and I think he's going to be very capable of winning it. Maybe he doesn't, but again, if he wins it, I think he's knocking on that door again. I mean, we're about to see Glover Teixeira at 40, almost 42 years old, fight for a world title. So, yeah, anything's possible, right?
Yeah, I will say this because this just came to me as I was looking at the rankings and as we were talking about this, and I feel like now I have to say it so that I jinx it intentionally and I don't speak it to an existence. But, like, it also feels – does he feel like he might be the next opponent if Khamzat Chimaev beats Li Jingliang? Like, he's the right person to build Khamzat Chimaev with?
There you go. That's a perfect one.
And, fuck, man, would that sell really well on like, a headline of a fight night card or, like, a co-main event to a pay-per-view? You've got me buying that. I would watch Wonderboy for fight Khamzat Chimaev, especially if he gets through Li Jingliang, because that shows me COVID didn't take too much of a toll, and he still got it, and he's still the exciting prospect. Of course, like, Li is like a hell of an opponent for him to have to walk through, but I think you're right. I think Wonderboy's not going anywhere yet. But this was an unfortunate step back. Speaking of unfortunate step backs, let's talk about the unfortunate or fortunate step back for Greg Hardy. The heavyweight fight between Ty Tuivasa and Greg Hardy ended in just 67 seconds when Ty Tuivasa appeared to get stumbled by a Greg Hardy right hand, only to land a very nasty left hand that I don't think put Greg Hardy out, but definitely injured his eye enough to make him cover up in a... I'm not quite sure the way I want to describe it, but I'm just going to say he covered up in a cowardly type fashion while he got a whole bunch of punches rained down on his face. Ty Tuivasa did the shimmy, did the shoey, then drank some hot sauce on the way to the stands, appeared to dance with Jorge Masvidal for a quick moment, and then drank a beer out of a second story pouring, which is, I mean, between the celebrations afterwards, between knocking out Greg Hardy, which I think a lot of people wanted him to do, and walking out to the Spice Girls, If You Want to Be My Lover, did anybody have a better week than Ty Tuivasa?
Yeah, dude, he honestly might be the star of this card. I mean, he knocked out Greg Hardy, who is obviously, like, you know, the villain at this point. Came out to the Spice Girls. He did about, you know, I think he said four shoeys. The hot sauce one, that was kind of unfortunate. I think that guy kind of, he should have asked him about the hot sauce. Ty wasn't even looking. He dumped a bunch of hot, and you can see it on video. Like, he really put the hot sauce
on there.
It's in there. I think at that point, Ty Tuivasa probably would have drank just about anything out of that shoe. He was pumped up. But yeah, man, I think he was one of the stars of the weekend. I think he, again, it was a 67-second fight. You can't take all that much out of it. It was a heavyweight fight, so this is what them big boys do. But, man, it was great to see. I love that guy's personality, and he comes to bang for sure.
Yeah, and low-key, this is a huge resurgence for him because I don't know if you remember, he had lost three in a row, a headliner to Junior Dos Santos. He then lost to Blago Ivanov and Sergey Spivak. Spivak actually put him out cold with an arm triangle choke. And then he got removed from the UFC rankings in a way that, like, sort of made us feel like he had been cut. I think the UFC even maybe had announced he was cut. I don't know if it was a contract dispute or something like that. He was gone for a year. And then suddenly he's back in the UFC. He didn't fight anywhere else. And since then, three first-round knockouts. Stefan Struve, Harry Hunsucker, which, of course, was on short notice. He was supposed to fight somebody else that weekend. And then Greg Hardy, which are, you know, at least two out of three of those are not bad names. Is he looking at, like, I'm not going to get specific on the matchmaking here, but is he looking at basically, like, is he a top 15 guy? Is he fighting a top 15 guy next?
Yeah, I think he deserves to fight a top 15 guy. And I don't have the rankings pulled up, but I think, you know, anywhere from, like, maybe an 8 to 15 guy, I think would make a ton of sense. Let me see. I actually have him up right here. Yeah, I mean, number 8 is Marcin Tybura. You know, Marcin Tybura, Augusto Sakai, Chris Dawkins, any of these guys. Tom Aspinall would be a fun fight. I think he deserves a shot at somebody, you know, maybe between that 8 to 15 range.
I think Walt Harris would actually be a fun one for him.
That's
too.
That's a good fight as well, yeah.
I just pulled him up because, like, Walt Harris is kind of at that weird crossroads, and it's really unfortunate because I love Walt Harris, and obviously his story is really tragic, but, like, he's lost a bunch in a row, right? And it seems like the UFC is going to let him go, but before they let him go, why not let him fight somebody who either he should beat, right? Like, you should be able to beat Ty Tuivasa if you're going to be in the top 15. Or it's a huge, you know, big step up for Ty Tuivasa. So, yeah, like, that would be a fun one for me. And I don't know if I'm overrating him because he knocked out Stefan Struve and Greg Hardy. And Greg Hardy, like, I mean, looked real sloppy in there. Like, I don't quite know what's next for that dude. But, like, he landed one punch and then it was like, he looked like a rock'em sock'em robot out there just trying to throw whatever he possibly could. So, yeah, like, I don't know if I'm overrating him, but Ty Tuivasa seems like he's on the up and up, and maybe some of that is his personality, because, God, is he fucking charismatic. Like,
yeah, dude, he's awesome.
Yeah, that dude, I mean, like, you can't watch a Ty Tuivasa fight or a Ty Tuivasa celebration and leave there and think to yourself, oh, that guy's not fun, or, like, I wouldn't want to hang out with that guy. Like, you might not be able to keep up with that guy, but you want to hang out with that guy.
Yeah, he's great. And, I think that's the charm about him, right? Yeah, I mean, dude, especially, like, you know, who knows where they're going to end up putting this Robert Whittaker Israel Adesanya fight when it does happen. But I mean, tied to Ibaza on the main card of that, if they do it in the Oceanic region, could be huge.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. Like him, the first two knockouts he had on this recent run, the Struve one and the Hunziker one, were both good. But like something about them being in the Apex or being on Fight Island, like it just takes away from Tai Tuivasa. The fact that this was in a live arena, that dude is made for a big arena. Like, and you're right. If this happened in New Zealand or Australia or like, you know, anywhere with like a pro Tai Tuivasa crowd, not that this crowd wasn't, but like, man, it's even bigger. But let's talk a little bit about Greg Hardy, too. Well, while, you know, he's obviously a polarizing figure, and that's putting it mildly, it's now two losses in a row, and both of them look pretty damn bad, right? Like, the Marcin Tybura one, now granted, Marcin Tybura has slowly made his way to being a top 10 heavyweight since that fight, but man, did that fight look bad for Greg Hardy, because not only did he look exhausted, but he looked like he was trying to get the fight over with once he hit the ground in the second round. Like, he didn't look like he wanted the fight to continue. Then he comes out here and gets starched in 67 seconds. And he really, I mean, he's 2-3 in his last five. You know, if you look at his whole UFC career, he's got no wins over people who are still in the UFC. Like, are we still, I mean, like, he was talking about boxing, you know, Tyson Fury before this fight, but, like,
yes, he was.
are we still talking about, like, is this still worth having him on roster? Like, does it make sense? I mean, he's probably costing the UFC more than, I mean, 50% of the guys on the prelims, but, like, and I mean that in a combined manner, but, like, what are we doing here with Greg Hardy?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say the Greg Hardy experiment is probably over. I think the UFC expected a little bit more. I think they expected the fan interest to be more, and I just don't think it was ever there. And again, Greg Hardy is not a bad fighter by any means. I still think he can win some fights. I think he's fought, honestly, pretty high-level competition, you know, given he was coming from a completely different sporting background. But, you know, again, like, he's probably costing them a pretty penny. I don't think he's generating the type of eyeballs that the UFC had envisioned for him. Maybe he gets another fight or two, but I think the run is probably pretty close to being done. Again, I don't know, like, if he gets cut, is he going to go to another promotion? Maybe a Bellator or a PFL tries to scoop him up, or he just stops fighting completely. I don't really know what to think about Greg Hardy at this point.
Yeah, and you mentioned there are some people for him to fight that he could beat, too, and I think you're right about that, but I'm also not sure that, like, fights against, you know, like, Parker Porter generate tons of interest. You know what I mean? Like, the idea of putting him with Tai Tuivasa, or the idea of putting him with, you know, Alexander Volkov, or, you know, even Maurice Greene. Like, Maurice Greene didn't stick around the UFC all that long, but, like, he was, like, an interesting character, or Marcin Tybura, or Jorgen De Castro seemed like he was going places. Like, pairing him with all those guys seemed like they were on the up and up. If you pair him with a guy, the types of guys I think he could probably beat at the very bottom end of this, I don't think that generates, I think that generates even less interest than what you were already saying was already a low level. So at his price, I mean, I think they're going to give him a fight or two more, but I'm not sure that they're going to be real happy with the outcome at the end of the day. So enough about Greg Hardy. Let me quickly tell you about Underdog Fantasy. Make sure to head on over to UnderdogFantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for a free $25. That's right. Sign up now for a free $25 that you can use as a shot for $1 million as part of their Best Ball 2 tournament. Also know draft day is happening on July 13th at 1 p.m. Pacific. Ryan Real Money Kramer will be drafting Underdog Best Ball teams for 24 hours straight. That's right. You can hop on the stream and draft with Kramer and all the guys, plus 15 free entries to the Best Ball Mania 2 will be given out during that stream. And if that's not enough, there's a $500 draft day props contest based on some of the things that Kramer will do that you can only enter if you have the SGPN app, which I'll tell you about in just a little bit. So make sure you download that app and sign up at UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And as I mentioned, SGPN now has an app. It is live in the App Store and the Google Play Store. That app gives you easy access to all of our picks, podcasts, and so much more. Don't forget to toss us a review on either the App Store or the Google Play Store and download that app today. All right, so Let's talk a little bit about, I guess, catch weights, but women's bantamweights. Irene Aldana steps on the scale a little bit heavy. And actually, both, by the way, me and Jeff both pick Yana Kunitskaya in this fight. And could not have been more wrong. Irene Aldana comes in a little bit heavy, almost five pounds over the limit, but makes up for it pretty quickly in absolutely starching Yana Kunitskaya. Mean punch, great follow-up on the ground. She looked vicious in there, like she was trying to prove something. Your thoughts on Irene Aldana?
I think, dude, honestly, the only miss was the weight miss. I think she performed excellent in there. I mean, what can you say about the performance? It was vicious, like you said, man. Her boxing is just so crisp. I think she's got some of the better boxing in that division. I mean, Kunitskaya is a tough fighter to finish, and she went out there and just went through her. Again, you know, maybe we'd be talking about her possibly being semi-close to a title, and she might still be pretty close to a title shot against Amanda Nunes, because Nunes has beat just about everybody in that division. But again, she missed weight. It's not like you're going to get a title shot off a weight miss. But yeah, dude, she looked really, really impressive. I think her boxing is super crisp.
Yeah, I actually said the winner of this fight was destined for a fight night headliner against either Jermaine Durandamine or Holly Holm.
That's the name. GDR is the name.
Yeah, it's funny because like that's sort of where every single women's bantamweight is right now, right? Like you win and you get a headliner against either Holly Holm or GDR. Probably lose, and then GDR or Holly Holm gets their eighth title
right?
shot.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's terrible, but like, I mean, part of it too is Irene Aldana did lose to Holly Holm, kind of got out wrestled, which is not what you expect from Holly Holm, but kind of what happened. And really, that's been her only weakness so far in the UFC, right? Like she has that Raquel Pennington loss, which was really close, the Holly Holm loss, which was less close. But apart from that, like, man, I'm not sure there's anybody in the UFC right now who has better, or at least the UFC's bantamweight division right now, who has better hands than Irene Aldana.
No, I mean, she has really good hands. That's why, dude, I think you brought up the perfect matchup. I think GDR would be just a really fun stylistic matchup because GDR has some of the better striking herself in that division. I'd love to see how her kickboxing style how she deals with Aldana's boxing. I think, dude, that's like a silver platter right there. Boom. She makes weight. She beats a GDR. She probably gets the next shot. You know, I think that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and she might even get to headline a fight night because that seems almost kind of like a fight nighty headline type piece there.
I think you could do it, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, GDR, I mean, she's put on enough good performances that I think you could sell her pretty well. And Irene Aldana's now got two awesome highlights between that one and the Ketlin Vieta KO, which is one of the better, like, one-punch knockouts I've seen in
pretty much
all women's MMA, right? Like, I'm not sure I've seen one that's looked just that, like, purely good without needing a follow-up, except for maybe the Amanda Nunes cyborg one. That one's right up there. But yeah, and as far as Yana Kunitskaya goes, I mean, like, there's 100 good fights out there for her. I don't think we need to match her up specifically, but, you know, she's alternated wins and losses, win two, lose one, win two, lose one. I mean, she's a top 10 fighter for sure, but, you know, she's still a step behind where she needs to be. So let's talk about the fight that I think most New England fans were pounding their chest in pride when they watched. Pride and horrible, horrible, horrible fear all at the same time. But that's Sean O'Malley's third-round TKO over Chris Moutinho. He put one of the worst beatdowns on Chris Moutinho I've ever seen. Chris Moutinho took more punches than any human being I've ever seen. I will also say this. Without particularly looking fazed by any of the punches he took. And this is coming from a guy who one-touch knockout Eddie Wineland, you know, who one-touch knockout, you know, many people before. But, like, I mean, one-touch knockout Thomas Almeida, Eddie Wineland. I mean, I guess he had to finish up on Jose Alberto Quinones, Alfred Kasherkian. Like, he's a guy who hits you once and it's over, and instead it took almost 200 punches to get Chris Moutinho out. So before we talk about the performance and how we feel about Sean O'Malley and Chris Moutinho after this one, let's first just talk about the stoppage itself. Do you feel like the stoppage at that point was warranted? Do you feel like it was a good stoppage, a bad stoppage? It should have been earlier, later. What were your thoughts on it?
I mean, at the moment, it was it a bad stoppage? I can't say it was a bad stoppage because, I mean, Chris Martina, he was just – dude, he was too tough for his own good. I mean, he just took so much punishment and kept coming forward. And, you know, again, we'll talk about him in a second. But it was just weird. Like, at that point, he didn't even look that rocked. Like, he might have even been rocked, like, more earlier in the fight. And it's, like, 30 seconds left. He didn't go down. I don't know. Again, like, Herb – you know, Herb has one of the toughest jobs in the business, right? The referee always has a tough job. He's maybe seeing something that we're not seeing. I can't cry too much about the stoppage, but there was like 30 seconds left. I would have liked to see him, you know, at least try to get the bell. But then again, it's like, what if he gets like viciously KO'd 10 seconds? But you can't tell the future. I don't know. I can't say I have that much of a problem with it. I just thought the timing was just a little bit strange.
Yeah, and that's pretty much exactly what I said, is that, like, I don't think the stoppage is wrong, but if you were going to stop it because he was being viciously beat, regardless of how woozy he looked, because you're right, he didn't even look particularly any more woozy at that point than he did earlier in the fight, why did you not stop it in the second round? Or even or even the first round.
The first round, yeah, exactly.
Like, you could have stopped it at any of those points, and I would have felt better about it. And, like, according to the official timer here, we got 27 seconds left.
Right, and exactly.
And I know that that's a shitty way to determine whether or not you should stop the fight or not. But, like, if you didn't stop it at 3 minutes, and you didn't stop it at 6 minutes, and you didn't stop it at 8 minutes, and you didn't stop it at 11 minutes, and you stopped it at 14 and a half minutes, like, I just don't buy that you're, like, really worried about his safety at that point. You know what I mean? Like, and I know, again, tougher job. He's, like, on the, you know, he doesn't have hindsight. He doesn't have the view from the outside of the cage. And you can't fault him for that because he's having to make a split-second decision. But, man, like, if you're really worried about his safety, get that bastard out there after 7 minutes because he was getting tattooed with punches.
Yeah.
And it was bad. Now, let's talk about this because I've actually had some back and forth with people about how I feel about Sean O'Malley after this fight. Let me put it this way to you. Do you feel better or worse for Sean O'Malley at this fight? Do you think he looks better than he did before?
Again, it's kind of a tough assessment, right? Because, I mean, Sean O'Malley went out there and balled out on a dude, right? But kind of like we talked about, you know, me and you had some conversations about this. I talked about this in my podcast. It's like the level of fighter that Sean O'Malley was fighting, right, a Lewis Smolka, a Chris Martino, whoever it was, I feel like he should be fighting up in the division, right? He's got all this hype behind him. We've seen him fight this level of competition. We saw him step up once. He lost to Marlon Vera, not the end of the world. I would have liked to see him fight tougher competition, right? You know, I don't know if it was – I mean, Sean O'Malley threw the kitchen sink at this dude. Like, here's the thing, right? Like, if Sean O'Malley gets the stoppage in the first round or something, right, like, we have a totally different view. And like we said – just a couple minutes ago, right? That fight probably could have been stopped earlier. But we saw it go all the way deep in the third round. Yes, he got the win. I thought Chris Martino even had some decent moments in that fight, but I think Sean O'Malley stayed patient. I think, you know, personally, I think Sean O'Malley has some of the best feinting in the UFC. He feints very well. He can hide his punches very well. He's got fast, snapping punches. But, you know, maybe it was just a night where Chris Martino was determined. His chin held up, and the dude was on a mission. But no matter what you think, it's time for this guy to step up. He called out a bunch of fighters. You know, looking at the rankings, if we're going to talk about that, I'd like to see him against, like, maybe a Jimmy Rivera who's sitting at 12. Mm-hmm. You know, he called out Dominic Cruz in his last fight. Actually, a Dominic Cruz fight would be super intriguing. It would honestly make a lot of sense as, like, a pay-per-view card, you know, maybe a third fight from the top, or even a co-main event. I think that would be awesome. I think that's the type of guy he should be fighting next, and not another, like – and again, this isn't a discredit to, you know, Chris Martino or Lewis Smolka, but at this point, I want to see him jump up a competition. It's time.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I would say this, too, and I know the UFC is not going to listen to me on this one, but I really want to see him fight somebody – with a different style, right? Because Moutinho wasn't ever going to take that fight to the mat. Marlon Vera was never going to take that fight to the mat unless freaking Sean O'Malley got drop foot like he did. Pretty much everybody Sean O'Malley has fought, you know, Thomas Almeida, Eddie Wineland, Jose Alberto Quinonez, Andre Sukumta, although Sukumta took him down once he was hurt, which was maybe the only time you don't want to take Sean O'Malley down.
I know, man.
It's so dumb. But the whole point is, like, I kind of want to see him fight somebody who wants to take him down. And there are tons of people in that division who make sense for that. Like, Ricky Simon would be fun. Cody Stamen. Cody Stamen. I don't know that he's ready for Merab Dvalishvili, but I would love to see it. Like, and I think those names are probably not the names the UFC are going to give him, but I would be more intrigued to see him against those guys than probably anybody else. Now, let's shift it to Moutinho, because I think he deserves some of the shine, although he did get $75,000 as Fight of the Night bonus, which I guess we could debate that. Is that, would you consider that the Fight of the Night? Like, it was really one-sided.
It was very one-sided. I think I don't know necessarily know if it was Fight of the Night. I think there were some other really good fights in that card, but it was probably just an ode to Moutinho, man.
Yeah.
Dude, it was just like, here, dude, like, take this. You freaking deserve it. I think Sean O'Malley said it best. The guy's probably sitting in the hospital stretcher after that. He deserves a lot of credit, man. Again, I think he had some moments. I think he bit down in his mouth guard. I thought he tagged Sean O'Malley a couple times. I think he was able to walk O'Malley down. I actually think later in the fight, you know, the first round, he was, like, not moving his head. He was just on, you know, right on the center line. But then he started cutting off angles a little bit and actually getting to O'Malley. He hit him with some hooks. He started tagging up O'Malley's legs, which I think that should have been a staple of his plan. Mm, he was able to hit O'Malley's legs. He just didn't go there enough. But, yeah, he acquitted himself very well for getting taking that fight on 11 days' notice on a fucking Conor McGregor pay-per-view card. Definitely earned himself another fight, and I'm excited to see it. And maybe, dude, he might even go down to 25 because he looked pretty damn small in there.
Yeah, I think so, too, although, you know, obviously Sean O'Malley's very tall for that division. He could go down to 25, but I will also say this. I think that performance landed him, I'm going to say this, at least two more fights in the UFC.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah.
Because I think he made Dana White a fan of his, which is not easy to do, taking a fight on short notice, but he certainly did it. So props off to Chris Moutinho. Let's go through the prelim card pretty light and quick here. Welterweights Max Griffin defeated Carlos Condit pretty handedly. It was pretty clearly 2-1 for Max Griffin, although one judge gave him 3 rounds. I mean, a good performance, but Max Griffin, we talked a little bit about it on the prelim primer, but Carlos Condit looked resurgent, but just probably too much with Max Griffin, no?
Yeah, I think, it took him a little while to figure, you know, Max Griffin out. I thought he had a lot of success in that second round, but Max Griffin, you know, fought a good third round. I thought he deserved the win. Honestly, man, I think Carlos still has a little bit left in his tank. I wanted to see him get that win. Obviously, I picked him. I was wrong on that one as well. But I thought it was a pretty solid performance from both guys. It was a fun fight.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was a fun fight. I did have Griffin in that one, but it was a lot closer than I envisioned it being. Speaking of close, actually, this one wasn't all that close. Michelle Pereira defeated Nico Price 29-28 across the boards. Price tried to storm back a little bit at the end. Hats off to Jeff. Jeff took Pereira. I took Nico Price with the upset here. Pereira's going to continue to be fun to watch, but do you see him as a real threat at welterweight?
I think Michelle Pereira has earned himself a – kind of like we were talking about with Tai Tuivasa. I think he's earned himself a top 15 guy. You know, Michelle Pereira and Muslim Salikov would be a ton of fun. Even like a Ponzinibbio would be a ton of fun. I think he's earned himself a shot at guys like that. I mean, he's on a 3-fight win streak. Cardio looked a little weary at the end of this fight, but I thought he put in enough work in the early 2 rounds. Again, he tried to fight this fight more patient. I mean, obviously we saw some of the wildness come out, but I think he's got the skill set and the explosiveness to. I think he deserves a shot, man. I'd like to see him against a top 10, top 15 guy.
I love talking about the fact that this guy had a more measured approach when he did a cartwheel kick, a backflip into mount, in like two different Superman punches where he kicked off the cage, and that was the measured approach from Jeff Ferreira. Let's talk about an actual measured approach, and that's Ilia Topuria. He defeated Ryan Hall by first round knockout. After staying away from all the leg lock attempts, Ryan Hall rolled into one of them and then just took a whole bunch of mean-ass ground and pound. Speaking of guys who deserve a top 15 opponent, Ilia Topuria, man, I don't know about you, but I couldn't be higher on this guy.
Yeah, that was he fought a very, very smart fight. He stayed patient. Again, Ryan Hall is like a very, very weird dude to fight, and we saw that. Topuria didn't open up, but I thought he stayed patient. He waited for his opportunity, and he finished Ryan Hall on the ground. Again, he knocked him out. It's not like he submitted him or anything. But, yeah, I think he deserves a top 10 guy. Dude, could you imagine it? Ilia Topuria, Shane Burgos? Or even Alex Caceres would be a fun little litmus test for him. But I definitely think he deserves one of these guys, maybe 11 to 15. I think all those names there would be very good fights.
The one that sticks out to me is Bryce Mitchell. I'd love to see those two tangle on the ground. Because Topuria, not for anything, actually really good at jiu-jitsu. He didn't engage Ryan Hall. Although I will say this. His choice of when to throw punches on the ground was very smart.
Very smart, yeah.
Yeah, he waited until there's 25 seconds left, and he was like, I can hold out against the leg lock basically for 25 seconds, so I'll open up now. I don't know if that was in the actual game plan or not, but it was, at least in the moment, very, very smart. So, yeah, sky's the limit for Topuria at the moment. He's currently still undefeated. Also looked really good and earned himself a bonus was Driscus Duplessis, and I'm probably saying his name wrong, even though he told us on the broadcast how to say his name, but he knocked out Trevin Giles pretty brutally with a counter punch in the second round. This is one of the picks that I did get right, which weren't too many on the prelims, but I did pick him correctly. Man, he looked pretty good in there too, and I know it's only his second fight in the UFC, but he's got those high-level KSW fights, and I can't believe we're saying this about every single person on the prelims, but, like, is he knocking on the door of the top 50?
Yeah, I think this is a very impressive performance. I thought pretty highly of Trevin Giles coming into this fight, and Duplessis looked really freaking good. That counter shot hit was beautiful, put his lights out. Obviously, he's got really, really good striking. I think his ground game is also pretty developed. Yeah, I think he himself deserves another shot at a guy hanging near that top 15.
Yeah, and we're maybe going a little bit out of order here, but I'll move it down two fights to the other middleweight fight, and this maybe is not a bad opponent for him, but Brad Tavares took I guess we're going to call it a split decision. He should have taken a unanimous decision over Omari Akhmedov, and that's coming from me. Who picked Omari Akhmedov, but there's no way Akhmedov won that fight. Actually, both me and Jeff picked Omari Akhmedov. We were both wrong on that one. Brad Tavares clearly won two rounds at a split decision. What do you think about him versus Duplessis?
Yeah, I think that could be a fun fight. I think Tavares has solid striking. Duplessis has great striking. I think it makes sense for both of those guys. Yeah, I'm all for it.
And Tavares looked fast in this one, too, which I think maybe the announcing team harped on a little bit too much how fast he looked, because he looked faster than Omari Akhmedov, but maybe not like the human
Manny
Flash.
Manny Pacquiao?
Yeah, Manny Pacquiao or the human Flash or something like that. But like they made it sound like he was, man, the second coming of some very fast boxer. And it was, he was good, but maybe not that. We'll move back up one. Women's flyweight, Jennifer Maia defeated Jessica Ai. Opened up maybe one of the more gnarly cuts I've seen. It has been good meme material on the internet for putting googly eyes on that cut and making it look like a face, things like that. But I would say Jennifer Maia surprised me with the power in her boxing.
Yeah, I thought Maia clearly won that fight. The internet is always undefeated. She looked good. I mean, she obviously really did a number on Jessica Ai's face. She's sitting at 4 coming into this fight. I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's not, like, if you look at this top 15, I mean, there's not a lot of options like fighting up for Jennifer Maia. I think Lauren Murphy is probably going to get the next shot. Maybe she fights a Chukagian or, honestly, an Andrade fight would be pretty damn fun, too. I thought she looked really good, though.
Yeah, and I actually, I interviewed Marina Maverick, who will be on Top Turtle this week, about how the UFC just doesn't seem to be doing anything with their flyweight division other than having the top five women or five or six women fight each other, or even like the top eight women fight each other, and then having the bottom seven women in the rankings fight each other. And it also seems to be split on age. You know, like Lauren Murphy's older, Roxanne Modafari's older. I don't know, is Caitlin Chokagian older or not?
I want to say she's probably like mid-30s.
Yeah, she's probably mid-30s, and like, I mean, Jennifer Maya's even like her low to mid-30s, and Jessica Eye's not younger, and like, I think Joanne Calderwood is probably mid-30s by now, and like, I'd just like to see them put Jennifer Maya in there with somebody like, you know, somebody like Miranda Maverick, or somebody like, you know, Alexa Grasso, or, you know, like, let one of the young women try to fight their way into the top of this division, because it is starting to look stale at the top of flyweight. But
it really is.
Yeah, and it's like, kind of disappointing, because like you said, like, Lauren Murphy definitely deserves the next title shot, but like, man, like, if she loses, like, what is there in that top seven that makes you excited? It's not much, and the
well,
only thing...
That's the problem, man. It's like you have such this dominant force at the top, and there's not a lot of pop outside of that. It's like next Lambda Slaughter, right? They're not like – I feel like I guess kind of like Miranda Maverick was saying, they're not properly building up their contenders, right?
Well, and if you look at who Miranda Maverick has fought too, not to, you know, like take all the shine out of this interview, which will air later in the week, but like if you look at those top contenders too, they all kind of fight similarly. You know, like there's variations in what they do, but like – she's like a big wrestler type. Like, why are we not promoting her? Or like, you know, Alexa Grasso is like a very pure boxer. And again, we're not building her up either. And then if you look at the people Miranda Maverick has fought in her career, dude, it is all young up-and-comers like her. Right? Like they had her fight. I mean, if you want to go back to Invicta, she fought Pearl Gonzalez. That doesn't really count. But like, so far she's fought Leanna Jojua, who's young. Right, like Leanna Jojua is only like 26 years old. She fought Jillian Robertson, who despite having a ton of fights, is also only like 25, 26 years old. And now she's fighting Macy Barber, who's only like, what, 23 years old.
Yeah, so she's like, very young.
So she's fighting young girl after young girl after young girl when there's all of these like older women who, I don't say they need to be removed, but at least like, at least give the opportunity that some mix-up could happen. But... enough of me complaining about that. Let's go to the last fight, which was Zalgiris Dzhumagulov, who fought Jerome Rivera, gave him his fourth straight loss. Dzhumagulov gets his first win in his three UFC bouts, and what was probably one of the more gnarly neck crank guillotine type, weird angle guillotine, I don't know what you want to call it, but it was gnarly looking, and he gets the tap. You picked Zalgiris Dzhumagulov, as did my co-host Jeff. I took Rivera, who was a large underdog. I liked the plus 280 number I think he appeared at. Didn't pay off for me. What'd you think about Zalgiris?
That was a nasty, nasty little variation, man. That was really impressive. Again, it was only a two-minute fight, so there's not a lot you can pull out of it. But again, like I said, on the prelim primer, I think Dzhumagulov is pretty well-rounded. I think he does have a nice skill set. It was nice to see him get his first win, and we'll see where he goes from there. But, dude, that neck crank was nasty.
Yeah, and he was also – and I went back and watched after the prelim primer. He was also in a much closer fight with Amir Albazy, who I'm actually a pretty big fan of Amir Albazy. He was in a lot closer of a fight than I remembered it being. I thought Albazy ran away with it, and I rewatched it, and, like, he looked good in that one too. So maybe I wrote him off a little bit too fast, but it does seem like this is probably the end of the road for Jerome Rivera at 0-4. Not a whole lot of people get four chances at their first UFC win, and sadly, it's probably the end for him. Now, one last thing before we put a pin in all of this. I usually like to talk about the performance awards because we talked a little bit about who won Fight of the Night and how I didn't agree with it. Performance of the Night went to Tai Tuivasa and Driscus Duplessis. What are your thoughts on those awards? Is that where you would have given them? Do you got a different one? Where would have you gone with the four sets? 75K bonuses, by the way, not 50K. 75K bonuses had you had your druthers.
I think they're fair. Again, I think for Tuivasa, it was the whole, like, performance. Not only the fight, but, like,
the show.
Intro.
The Tai Tuivasa show.
The show, yes, to him on the mic and hyping up the fans and then drinking the shoeys. Yeah, I'm all about that. Honestly, I would probably go with Topuria over Duplessis, just because I think very highly of Ryan Hall, and that was a very impressive performance. Chris Martino needs to get some sort of money, whether it was Fight of the Night or just a $75 check just to have. Irene Aldana, she was up there. This card was just, honestly, from top to bottom, it was really freaking good. There was a lot of good things going on in this card.
And that Jennifer Maya Jessica I fight, I don't think I had it as Fight of the Night, but it wasn't all that far away. Max Griffin, Carlos Condit would have been fine for me as Fight of the Night. There were plenty of options for Fight of the Night, but I think you're right. At the end of the day, they were trying to figure out how they could just hand Chris Martino $75,000, which, of course, if they just paid him a little bit better, they probably could have just handed him $75,000 regularly. But ultimately, I am glad to see him get it, because that's, I've said this time and time again, if you're going to give bonuses to people and it's close, give it to the person where that's life-changing money, right? Like, if you're going to give a $75,000 bonus to either, Chris Martino or, say it was a different main event or Conor McGregor, like, $75,000 is, the type of money that Conor wipes his ass with, whereas...
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Martino suddenly doesn't have to mix paint at Sherman Williams anymore, so, good for him for being able to, actually just train and fight. So that's going to be big money for him. All right, so that just about does it for our recap of UFC 264, Poirier versus McGregor. Of course, we will be back on our usual Wednesday show. Juicy Jeff Fox will be rejoining me then for the preview of Islam Makhachev versus Thiago Moises in the main event, as well as Marion Renault versus Misha Tate. And what is... a very bizarre fight to be a co-main event. I can't believe we're actually seeing Misha Tate fight again. Of course, there's all kinds of other really fun fights on there, as well as getting to see Matros Gamrot fight again against Jeremy Stephens, no matter how you feel about him. Rodolfo Vieira getting a chance to redeem himself after getting submitted last time out. Montserrat Ruiz, who I'm a big fan of, and we'll talk about, and all kinds of other good fights. But we'll be getting to that on Wednesday, of course. Remember to rate and subscribe to the MMA Gambling Podcast. If you are listening to this in the Sports Gambling Podcast feed, we will be in both places for a little while longer, but we will soon only be in the MMA Gambling Podcast feed. So if you are following us in the full Sports Gambling Podcast feed, make sure you head on over to the MMA Gambling Podcast. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe, all that kind of good stuff. Leave us 5 stars. Tell us we did a good job. If you don't think we did a good job, just go somewhere else then. But in the meantime, make sure that you also follow all of my writing at Gumby Vreeland. You can find me on Twitter, and that's usually where you'll see all my writing in the various places. Of course, you can go to the sportsgamblingpodcast.com, SGPN, and follow me there, as well as MMA-Manifesto, where I'll have a couple of previews coming out. You can, of course, find Jeff's work there as well. And if you want to check out my new co-host for the day, which Jeff may be a little bit jealous, but you can check out my new co-host for the day at the Fixed Fights Podcast. You can find that at Twitter at Fixed Fights Pod, or you can check him out at Twitter at KCPKO. Anything else the folks need to follow you at there, Kurt?
No, I think that's perfect. Yeah, if you want to check out the pod, check us out. I appreciate being on the show. Thanks for inviting me, man.
Absolutely, and I am Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He is Kurt Chase Patrick, and we will catch you next week.